My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
Jim should be back next week from his vacation. Look forward to having him back because we've got a lot to talk about this week, and I have a feeling it's going to be with us for a few weeks of discussion. So in addition to a lot of previews and a lot of sneak peeks from Games Workshop, we have two codices that literally came out of left field for preview, and the leaks are flowing like my sprinkler system in my front yard. Also, there's a hobby angle on that. I'll get to that in a little bit later. But also, we had three large tournaments, most of them in Europe, but one of them has sparked an interesting controversy, but not the usual controversy that we normally talk about. It's a lot of discussion. We'll get into that a little bit later. And then, like I said, discussion doesn't seem to be slowing down anytime soon, so I have a feeling this might be with us for a few weeks. But first, let's get into the new releases. So before we get to the big codices of the week, a new Emperor's Children, off to a great start. Black Templar, Emperor's Champion is what I was trying to say. Ray, what'd you think of this bottle?
I like it. It really is an homage to, of course, it is Primaris.
I was trying to read through the lore. Did they actually Primarisize him as well?
It's a Primaris model.
Okay.
They scroll down and actually see, mm-hmm. and then the shadow is the new one, and it's Primarisized. It's a slightly different look to it. It's definitely its own Primaris model.
So interesting. Okay.
With how different it looks, I wouldn't be surprised if this is just the first step in maybe seeing some plastic Primaris. What was the Black Templar's special troop?
It was like the initiates, the neophytes, and the fact that they could all lump together. What is that thing called? It's going to run on the tip of my tongue. I have PTSD from Black Templar. When I first got into 40K, they were the adback that people are running into now. They were the most broken army of the day. And my first experience in the tournament with that guy was a Black Templar player. So I've ever since then, I've labeled Black Templar players as being that guy, which is totally unfair, but man, this guy was a jerk. Oh my God. What is that thing's called? It'll come to me later. The fun story with that was I was playing Necrons at the time, and at that point, this was pre-Codex Necrons. So I literally would show up to tournaments with a few pages of White Dwarf in a plastic sleeve in my three-hole binder. And finally, this tournament was the first tournament that I could play with a real codex. I was like, this is going to be awesome. It's going to be great. And back then, remember Veil of Darkness? You could teleport out of close combat. And uh-huh. My opponent, of course, being Black Templars, so were all about Rhino Rush, close combat. He was all pissed. He was like, what? What is this? Can you check your codex, please? Sure. Show him the page. Can I see it, please? Here's the codex. And this is where the jerk move comes in. He goes to his buddy at the table next to us. Says, can I see your Necron Codex? And I looked at him like, are you accusing me of creating a fake codex to get by on a small rule? And he just looked at me like, and he didn't even answer me. He just looked at us and said, do they match? Are we good? Do you want to check the page numbers? Why don't you check the font while you're at it? So yeah, he had to, after checking my codex, he had to check his friend's codex to make sure that, you know, it was indeed a legit copy. I was like, oh my God. All right, dude, you're on. So, it was my first experience with Black Templars. But anyway, so I'm excited to see what they come up with Black Templars. I like the lore of them, the idea that they're the whole kind of old school in a way, and fight their way through. I'm just curious to see how they make it all work in the lore with between Grimaldus and Heldrek and all that other stuff. So, be kind of cute with the characters. So, other news. On the 40K side of things, it's a little bit of a stretch. Not a lot on 40K. It was mostly focused on the new kill team, which has been fully redesigned from the ground up. I'm encouraged to what I see, because one of the things that really ruined kill team for us was the kind of the cash grab of how many more stuff can we ram into kill team. And at that scale, there's certain models that just had no place being there. And Space Marine Captains was one of them. It's kind of silly to have. Why is the captain or the chapter master leading a small ragtag of people? I guess it's movie Marines. And so yeah, they've really revised everything. But probably the biggest piece, if you're interested in the kill team, that's missing, that they have not done a lot of preview, is the compendium. So basically, the Kill Team box set comes out with all that cool terrain and all the crazy Fantasy Flight style rulers. And then the next book is the compendium, and basically gives every codex for Kill Team in one tome. And be curious to see how that all comes together, because the building construction, you know, how they build your Kill Team is very different now. And it seems like they went back to the original method of you only have a smattering of units available to you. So I'd be curious to see how all that pans out. One thing I found also interesting, that it's very similar to an early 90s competitor in terms of playstyle. And it is also very similar to, at the time, they were thinking about making 40K basically an extension of Space Hulk. So they wanted to basically use that. And which brings me to my next news. A certain key member of the Games Workshop staff talked him out of it. So Ray, you've been in the hobby for a long time. Jervis Johnson has retired from Games Workshop. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that.
I don't know if I've looked too much into to really say. I always focus too much on like the models themselves and the rules to really look into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of mixed on this. In one regard, I have high regard for him. He was actually not a game designer originally. He was actually on their sales team, and he is the original designer of Blood Bowl. And that's he said, "Hey, if you got an idea, what do you got?" And he brought Blood Bowl to life, and with that got his spot on the design team full time. The bad news is, as time has progressed, he was sort of the pump the brakes kind of guy. This is what tradition of Games Workshop is. And, you know, some of those major changes that we've seen recently have finally been because he kind of let go a little bit. So he's also said some very bombastic things. I think people took them a little too literally because he's a GW employee, and not recognizing that he's a proponent for narrative play, not necessarily competitive play. So some of his comments, I think, did a lot of damage for the company, unfortunately, depending on your point of view. So either way, somebody to spend that much time with one company, I still applaud him, and he did a lot for the hobby. But I think it's a sign of the times that, you know, that's the last of the original guard of when Games Workshop was formed. And there's basically nobody there that remembers anything prior to 5th edition. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the you know, looking way ahead, what 10th edition is going to look like without Jervis Johnson kind of reminding the young bucks this is how things used to get done around here, and that push-pull of innovation versus tradition. So I'll be curious to see how that comes down the pike. And the last bit of news from Games Workshop this week, it's they released an FAQ for the Middle Earth Strategy Battle game. And I don't play the game very much, but from what I understand, the most asked question on that FAQ was, who still plays Middle Earth Strategy Battle game? I'm actually a little worried about that game, because the only place I saw it being played was at Nova. And they had easily movie-ready miniature sets for that game. And it was just, you know, even if it was like, yeah, I don't know if the game's any good, but I want to play a game of this if I just kind of showed up and had nothing else to do. But beyond that, I don't know anyone who's ever played this game. So I'm like, So it's always one of those, I look at that game and I go, how much of the production is that holding back from the other games at this point?
Who's to say?
Yeah. So speaking of that, the Deathkrieg models, I'm assuming, will be folded into an Astra Militarum Codex in the near future. In the meantime, the Beast Snaggas have been snagged. I guess there's none of those left. And so if you have a copy, you should be fortunate. And what we're seeing already, that what, Hexfire is easily unavailable as well?
I didn't see how fast it sold, but within the day it sold.
So the conversion race is on to create an Infernal Master, which is the new unit for 1,000 Suns. And I guess people are just playing with their old Drago until the new model comes out.
Crow.
Crow, excuse me. All right. Yeah, that's one of those lines that has like a million characters with Stern, Crow, Drago, all straight. And the one character I like.
There's only
four more than, well, three more than Drukhari. So, but anyway, yeah.
Look at James to the one actual.
That's true. That's a good point. That'd be interesting to see when they come out, if they get a new character or whatnot. So anyway, so Ray, you've had a chance to look over the Thousand Suns. Tell us a little bit what you think.
I kind of like what I see. If you go through YouTube, you can find at least a half a dozen people who actually kind of fix itself. There's not a lot of big changes, but there's a fair amount of smaller changes. You know? So you have things like the rubrics are only 10-man squads max. You can take the soldier at the minimum size squads now. You don't have to have 10. There's a nice little rule that the the special rule is called Thrall. It is for every exalted sorcerer, you can take either a sorcerer in terms of taking up an HQ slot.
That's kind of handy.
They have changed the rules for the Helldrake. Now, this is the first Chaos Codex where we see the demon engines that kind of gained the Dinobots for some people. That's what they would call them. I am one of those people. So, of course, that's the Mauler Fiend, the Forge Fiend. So, previously, the Helldrake, it was a lot like a Demon Prince. Yes, it flew. It went so far.
It was pretty nasty because, it could move 20 inches and pretty much ignored intervening models and terrain. So it had a lot of unexpected blocking capacity. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but of course, if you got too close to it, in theory, charge, maybe lock it in the cop.
Right.
Well, now it's different. So the Helldrake now has the supersonic with Airborne Predator. So all this basically says that it can still, for the most part, do exactly, but it stays up in the air as far as the rules go. So like you can't charge it with it unless you have to fly. Its movement has moved to its max wounds. It goes 20 to 60 inches for its movement. Actually degrades as it gets with the 20 stays the maximum. Goes from 60 to 40 to 30. Has the hover jet rule, which is during your command phase, you can, in which case the move characteristic becomes 20. It loses air personic stuff. So it basically has a lot of space marine flyers.
I think it's a big deal that it's actually a flyer now. So,
and a fun little thing is it's got the Hunter in the Sky special rule as well, which makes attack against the unit that can fly one to the attack rolls. So, yeah, that's kind of nice.
And it's already got the improved weapon skill 3+, so it means it's hitting flyers on 2+.
Yeah. Now that does, its weapon skill plus 6 skill does also get wounded, but that still basically means that in those cases, against flying units, it goes, 2, 3, so pretty nice. The Bale Flamer is now a range 18, assault 2d3, it's strength 6, AP minus 2, and 2 damage. In fact, all of its weapons are 2 damage.
Do some marine hunting. Now all the, just go back real quick, all the Rubric Marines and Cult Terminators got their extra wound, right? Just like the Imperial ones?
Yeah, and they also got an extra attack.
And they lost Hateful Assault though, right? Yeah, so this, which is actually a better trade because you get the plus one attack all the time as opposed to just on the charge. So that's pretty cool.
Now a handful of units in the like Scarab Occult Terminators and some of the vehicles got a Stardaze special. Now, it's a new thing. Basically what it does is it has to do with the detachment ability that they get, which is Brotherhood of Sorcerers, which is different now. It's no longer extra range to psychic powers. Now is everything that's the Brotherhood of Sorcerers gets the plus one to psychic tests. And then anything with Stardaze or Xanards gets a 5+ end bone save.
Which blew me away. That includes the rhinos and all the tanks and all the aforementioned demon engines, which already had a demon save still, but that adds up pretty quickly.
Not necessarily true.
Okay.
So, I don't remember. Double check. So the Helldrake does not have that.
But it should have the invul save from the,
It does still get the demon. It does still have the invuln save.
Yep.
In fact, the Forge Fiend and the Mauler Fiend have 5+ invuln. That's one. But one thing that does get this is the Hellbrute.
Ooh.
And so it's kind of a fun little thing. We're starting to see hints of this as far back as what the chapter approved for 2020 is. So the Hellbrute has the Arcana Assert, which means it gets a 5+ invuln. Also, so there's the option you can have if you do to just go with the Brute Fists. Of the fists have either ultra. Yeah, so guess what?
Mm-hmm.
If you go with the combi, it's now an Inferno. So you could have a Hellbrute going around with two fists, and inside each fist is an Inferno combi bolter. So with two, strength 4, AP minus 2 weapons. So it's not game-changing, but I mean, for a Hellbrute, that's kind of a nice little thing to have, is actually a thing which Thousand Suns don't really have a whole lot of, close combat stuff.
Right.
while still having some range to it. And it's more than just a simple.
I wonder if it makes sense just to go all in on close combat with the Hellbrute, knowing that you have other options in the box for shooty weapons. I don't have to look at the whole codex when it comes out. An interesting idea.
But like, it's got monstrous resilience, so it's got subtract 1 to damage, and then it has frenzy. Each time this monster makes it, it has 7 of frenzy, you get to 8. So there's no take like there used to be for the Hellbrutes.
Oh yeah, you're right. The crazy decides to shoot, and if it doesn't have a shooting weapon, it just charges. It's all gone. Okay, that's pretty cool. Pretty wild stuff already. Interesting seeing the new psychic powers as well, because although they made a few changes, there's some of the old favorites are there, just with different names.
Yeah, and so there's not, there used to be 3 choices, because they had access to regular Codex CSM. I've only got 2, but instead of there only being 6 powers for each discipline, there are not. So we still have 18 different psychics, and the units have access to either a lot of instances, it's spells that have multiple spells, just have to pick one. It'll say the discipline of change, the discipline of vengeance for when you're doing multiple spells.
So they reversed their FAQ ruling from a few months back. Okay. Interesting.
And Magnus knows all.
Tell me more about Magnus. Is he truly up to Primarch standard?
He's definitely not the melee powerhouse the Mortarian is. So he's got the Kabbalistic Ritual. He's got the Demon Primarch rule, which of course it's if the army's battle forged, he's got an, which is while a friendly Thousand Suns core unit is within 6 inches, each can attack. He's got the Sorcerer's, which is in your command phase, you select one friendly Thousand Suns core within 6 inches of this month until the start of the next command phase. Each time he makes an attack, he's got the Crown of the Crimson, which gives him a 4+, and he never suffers perils.
Jeez.
He's got the Gaze of Magnus, which gives him the strong smite. It's on any roll, it's going to be a d6, and if you 11 on the psychic test, it's 3d3.
Oh,
he's got Unearthly Power, which is you can reroll psychic test taken for this month. Each time a psychic test or deny the witch test is taken for this month, until the result. And if he has 10 or more wounds, or 2 instead.
That is serious output. So, interesting. Of course, the question is he going to be survivable enough to get all these powers off if he goes second?
I think it remains to be seen how people react. So, we do still have a lot of the psychic powers that were very useful for us. We've got Glamour, which is subtract 1 to the attacks to hit rolls. We've got Weaver of Fate still, which is a little different. It's not the +1 to save anymore. It's a 4+ end one, but still helpful for things. We've got Templation, which is basically healing. So D3 wounds healed. You just can't use that on vehicles.
That's pretty gross, considering that they all have that 5-up invul. They still have the, if it's a damage 1 weapon, you get +1 armor save, so they're basically rocking a 2-up armor against damage 1, and they have a stratagem to get a damage reduction of -1. And you can heal them now? Oh, jeez. That provides a lot of resiliency.
And Magnus actually has access to multiple traits. In fact, he's got 3. So he's got Prince of Eons, which is Old Deny the Witch tests. He can benefit from additional Kabbalistic in each psychic phase, because normally a unit kill. He's got Inform, which is you subtract 1 from the damage characteristic of attacks. And he's got of the, which of course is basically just all the psychic powers from the discipline you have access to.
So he has all 18. Now, how he can cast 2, deny 2, or is he cast 3?
So Magnus can cast and deny 3.
Oh God. Okay. So he's got 18 spells to choose from, which 3 he wants. All right. I guess the only upside to that as an opponent would be that you're locked into your list building to what those 3 spells are. So, because I don't remember seeing the old strategy where you swap those out game by game.
Again, he's got access to all. Right. There's nothing to say that he has to pick 3 of those. At any time, you could pick which one you're going to cast.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood the rule then. So he actually knows 18 spells. He can only cast 3 of them per turn. I thought...
Yeah,
oh,
he can
okay.
cast 3.
I totally misunderstood that then. I took it as he has access to all 18. He has to choose the 3. Okay, wow. Oh, that's gross.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you want something like that. So an example, the Exalted Sorcerer. An Exalted Sorcerer can attempt to manifest too. And it has... It knows Smite and two psychic powers from the Discipline of Change and or the Discipline of Vengeance. So you can pick two powers each or two, but that's all. Yes. Because of his Warlord trait, knows all. In fact, there you could give that Warlord trait to it if it's not Magnus even.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, wow, that changes things a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Now, one thing that's important is in the 8th edition codex, in Disc of Tzeentch had the demon key. That is gone. So, exalted sorcerers on discs, any of the Tzeentch discs.
I'm sure there was some interaction with the demon codex that I'm missing off the top of my head, but it's all gone now. Okay, interesting.
So one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting too is the in this case Legion Command. You know, there's a lot of choices in HQs. There's the Demon Prince, there's the Exalted Sorcerers, and then there's Sorcerers, and of course the HQ. But there's a lot of Legion Command choices. Well, it's actually kind of nice and spread out. So there's the ones that you can see the points list from Chapter Approved. There's 9 of them. 3 of them go for Exalted Sorcerers. 3 of them go for Sorcerers or Sorcerers. 3 of them, you can put Aspiring Sorcerer or the Scarab Occult Sorcerer from just your infantry units. And they're actually kind of... Some of these are, granted, situational, but useful. I wanted to kind of point this one out. This one is for the Sorcerer or Sorcerer in term. This model can attempt to perform a psychic action in its psychic phase instead of attempting to manifest one psychic. So, you know, if you want to do a psychic action, you have to give up all psychic powers. Well, if you give it this Legion Command trait, you're just giving up one psychic.
That's
kind of useful.
Yeah, we were waiting for that. That mesh, something to start making. I have to reread all the psychic craft, or whatever they call that tree of secondaries. But yeah, you'd always kind of brought the cheap sorcerer to be like your action monkey if you're even going to take those. Now you can bring the opposite. You got your big guy. I'll just use up a power, so one less power this turn, but I can activate this, you know, perform the ritual or whatever it's called.
Another is this is called the Ardent Automaton. That is, if this unit is performing an action, this model's unit can shoot without that action fail.
Always handy as well. Very, very cool. Especially for an army that doesn't have a lot of mobility. That's really cool.
And it's nice that Rubrics and the Scarab Occult Terminators are now fearless. Which makes a lot of sense. You know, some things that, in a sense, are conscious.
Right. In a former life, I would have run away. All right. Anything else on Thousand Sons for this week?
I think I'll go ahead and cut it. There are still the various cults. They've made some little changes here and there, that stuff. You go ahead and find YouTube videos. This episode go an extra hour just me talking about Thousand Sons because, I mean, I could. I should probably get to sleep at some point tonight.
Nah, don't need any. Sleep is for the weak.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
So in addition to the Thousand Sons, we also have their Imperial counterparts, the Grey Knights, coming out as well. And let's kind of peruse a couple of the various blogs and YouTube people who have a preview copy. And the first thing, I as a player who really cut his teeth in competitive play during 5th edition, you have a little PTSD of playing against Grey Knights. For more recent history, though, it's, you know, Grey Knights kind of got robbed a little bit in that the Psychic Awakening really added a lot to that codex, and then COVID hit, so no one ever got to see it on the table. So saw a couple practice games before the door came down on being able to play at the store, and they could have been a bigger splash in 8th edition than a lot of people remember. So they did keep their whole tide system. There's been a few changes here and there, but for the most part, that is pretty much the same. If you were, okay, what models do I need to buy before they get sold out? Strike teams and the Baby Bjorns. So the Nemesis Dread Knights are by far the standout winners of this particular codex. All have been upgraded. All have, you know, the core mechanics that make the army go. Specifically, when it comes to the strike teams, they lost their plus one to cast, which is too bad. But in return, they got a couple things. So they get plus one to deny, which is pretty nice. And they can ignore immortal wounds on a 5+, which is also pretty neat. And did I mention? I think we've mentioned this once before. Yeah, they get full smites back. So they are all doing, you know, regular damage now. They don't have to worry about these mini smites. And then you take into account that each of the units also have a native psychic power. And the biggest thing when it comes to strike squads is Hammer Hand, which basically goes off on a 5+ for warp charge, and they get to reroll all wounds in close combat. Yikes. That makes them pretty heavy hitting at that point. So that's just on your basic troop. The Nemesis Dread Knights, I said, this, all the weapons got buffed up to ridiculous levels, and especially because we saw already on the Warcom preview, they have both their swords have the sweep attack as well as the stabby attack, so they have a lot of options to go from there. Yes, you can still take the Grandmaster in the suit, so you're good to go there. Unyielding Anvil, you're going to hear that a lot over the next few weeks as they start making their way. It's a Warlord trait. Simply what it does is if you're within the aura range, which I believe is 6 inches, let me just double check. It's basically like Rites of War, but a little bit better. You choose a core or in character models, they gain OPSEC, and they already have OPSEC. They count as twice as many models when it comes to controlling the objective. So then all of a sudden, your Nemesis Dread Knights can be OPSEC, and your Strike Marines now count as double. So that helps you win the primary mission quite handily there. So that's pretty nasty. Dun, dun, dun. Psychic powers really haven't changed too much. Probably the biggest thing that's everyone's going to complain about is Astral Aim has changed. No longer be able to shoot without line of sight. You simply get rerolls into shooting as well as ignoring the benefits of cover. That will definitely change a lot how this army played in 8th edition, but they've got so many other things available to them. You may not miss it, but it's very key to moving forward from there. So really, really, really cool stuff. Not quite as, like, one thing I don't see is the crazy Cybolt ammunition. They have their own chaplains and prayers and all that fun stuff. Here we go. I am trying to find. They also have the glow up thing where if you want to upgrade a character to something super special, you can do that as well, just like in the Chikari Codex. Here it is. The secondaries are pretty nasty. So there's basically one where if you're playing demons, you get bonus points for killing demons. Yay! So keeps it kind of fluffy. There's assault, teleport assault. And if you arrive from teleport strike or redeploy from Gate of Infinity, you get bonus points for what you kill when you do that. Pretty neat stuff, but there was one. The first time we've actually this is I'm reading this. If we finally get a good Warcraft secondary, it's called Purifying Ritual. Let's any number of your psychic units, any number, can't be characters though, but all the strike squads, suddenly every one of them can do this in the psychic phase. Perform a psychic action to purify an objective marker within 3 inches. Each turn, you score points depending on how many different objectives were purified that turn, capping out at 6 VP. If you purified 4 or more, this rule. So imagine that for a second. You guys are spread across the table, and okay, I'm ducked and I have enough cover, and I've got enough other threats like my Nemesis Dread Knights. I'm just going to zap that for 6 points, all those objectives, and keep doing that turn after turn and maximum. You know, finally you get 6 per turn, and then probably 2-3 turns, you've already maximized that 15 points. That's pretty nasty. So be curious to see how that, because you have all these units lying around. So anyway, that is the fun of Grey Knights. But like I said, start teching for Strike Teams and Nemesis Dread Knights. Those are by far the big heavy hitters from this game. Ah, they're finally back.
I'm actually kind of excited. So Grey Knights are actually one of my favorites. Factions. I mean, right after, because I started with Necrons, first faction of the Knights.
Yeah, so like I said, I played.
I did trade. Yeah, just decided to start collecting some of those again, just for the fun of it.
Yeah, Grey Knights were just that. Basically, imagine how things are now with AdMech, but it was in the time when GW released an FAQ once every other year, so that the Scourge just lasted, and there was only 3 Codex releases a year, so it just lasted forever. You hear stories like a third of the field being Grey Knights, and that those are not exaggerations. It was that bad.
Well, I still remember when the Purgation Squad could shoot through mountains without line of sight.
What was that one elite squad that basically they assault you, and then before you swing, they light themselves on fire and burn you, and they suffer no damage? The Immolators? Was that? No, that's not it. It's a Sisters Battle. What the heck were those?
I think what you're thinking of is the Purifier Squad.
Yes! Oh god, they were terrible. It was just like, what the heck does that do? Yeah, they were pretty awful.
Yeah, they're the one unit, and from what I read, doesn't actually benefit from basically the detachment stuff, because they're outside of the command structure.
Ooh, I did not know that. Okay.
I don't think we'll see much of the Purifiers. I am really interested to see what kinds of lists people decide to go with when it comes to this arm, just because, in a sense, a lot of the squads are very similar. I mean, that's why you buy a strike squad box for Purifiers or Purgation Squads or the Interceptors, which are their fast attack. And what makes them different is extra heavy weapons or flamers or their special version of the jump. So,
oh yeah, that's still a
really
game,
curious to see.
that extra shunt move is still in the game. It's a stratagem now. You know, if you have the keyword, you can do it.
It's a stratagem now?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, just like the grenades, you know, the upgrades and stuff like that.
I still think that's a really useful thing. It kind of sets them apart from basically every other assault style jump. Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast, here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes, and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models, and when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com. And when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
Yeah, they were pretty neat. All right, well, those are, you know, what to expect in future tournaments. Let's talk about tournaments from last weekend at this point. So, Ray, what events did we have this past weekend?
All right, well, I found 3. I thought I'd go ahead and start off with the Alberta Classic, because it was kind of an interesting setup for the top 5. I'll go ahead and state it. In 5th place, we had Trotsky playing Iron Warriors.
Really? Wow. All right.
In 4th, Riley Tremblay playing Eldar. 3rd, David Colton Cult Mechanicus. 2nd, Darren Jack playing Orcs. And in 1st, Ozzy Bush playing Freebooters.
It's still in Ben's list already. I'm just kidding, Ozzy. But I know Ben took his list for a spin this past weekend, so it was a Freebooters list. I don't know if Ozzy's is the same list, but... Also, how cool is it to be actually called Ozzy? That's really cool. So, all right. So, Orcs are out of the gate, and they already have their first GT win. Look at that.
All right. The next event I came across was the SummerSlam 2020.
Wrestling
with
event.
The subtitle. Yeah. With the subtitle, Hammer. Okay. I don't know why they went with that, but it's part of the title. All right. And so, in 5th place there, we had Tim Smith playing Dark Angels. It was Daniel. In 3rd place... I don't know if this is actually their real name or if they're just that unfortunate. Hugh Jass playing in 2nd, Eddie Chater playing Drukhari, and in 1st, Matt Robertson playing Adeptus Sororitas.
All right. Nice seeing Matt back on the tournament circuit. And it's pretty cool. One tournament we're not going to cover this week because it was only an RGT, but it had the best name ever. We have AC, so come to our tournament. I was like, that's awesome.
It makes an argument for itself.
Absolutely. All right, Ray, so you got one more event for us this weekend?
One more event. This is Into the Hellstorm, the Bolter. So, in fifth place, we had Manny Chima with Cult Mechanicus. In fourth, Anthony Chu. Third, John Swallow. In second, Tonks playing Cult Mechanicus. And in first, Alex Harrison, just the Star Days.
So, a couple big names in that top five. Obviously, Alex Harrison famously went up against Brandon Grant in the 2017, I think it was, at 2018. LVO final, but and Manny Chima, who has won several events as well, but yeah, Into the Hellstorm. This event created quite a hellstorm of controversy, and if you look at Mr. Chima's scores, you'll notice that he was doing pretty well. Then one round, he got a big fat zero, and started asking around, and kind of some jokes were made that he just showed up late and didn't overslept the first round of day two. That was not the case, which I thought was peculiar. Manny's, a bit of a professional when it comes to his business with Warhammer. But it just brought up an interesting case, because as we know, we use Swiss pairings, which means winners versus winners. So the top players at that point will play each other each round. It's fantastic for down the road if we actually get to beyond streaming and actually televised Warhammer, that you always have a great matchup every round, whereas like you look at current sports where they seed the top two players to play lower ranked players in the early going to guarantee they get to the final, or at least improve their odds of getting there. So usually the opening rounds are not even televised. Well, Manny tried to overthink the system a little bit and got caught, and basically he realized he was going to win his game handedly, so rather than rack up the score, he purposely moved some models off objectives so he would get a lower score, knowing that he'd still be in the undefeated bracket, but be playing a lower-ranked opponent in the round. Judges caught him on that and therefore zeroed out his score for that game, which has now created So this has created quite the internet discussion. Is he violating the spirit of the game, which is what he was penalized for? And what should be done about it moving forward?
Well, that is gaming the system.
So I'm kind of torn on this one. And ethically, you'd like to think that you want to, to play to the game, not to the system. On the other hand, if you're already winning 75-20, putting on another 20 points on your opponent creates a feel bad. And we see that in sports all the time. They have mercy rules and other times where teams were accused of running up the score. Was he also not in the spirit of the game? But I don't know. I'm still on the fence about this one. I think it's the system, not the the player made a questionable call. I can see both sides of it. I'm not defending what he's doing, but I look at more of the system. I think needs some fixing at this point, as opposed to there's a lot more improvement we can do there. So some of the things what we've seen already, if you look on BC, if you're a tournament organizer and you go onto BCP, you do have options to how the pairings are done. So for example, right now we say top versus top. So if you're after round one, you have two players who scored max points with a win, they're probably going to play each other in round two. What you can do differently is set it to random, which means that on round two, you take all the winners from round one and they'll be randomly paired among each other, as opposed to the top player versus the top player, which is, it's a solution, so you can't game the system at that point. Second option we've seen is you can do it by strength of schedule, which basically the way they measure strength of schedule in BCP is how many points did their opponent score. So, for example, the idea that if I won my game but my opponent scored 70 points, I have a stronger schedule than somebody who beat their opponent, 98-50 or something like that. I'm not always a big proponent of total points is the strength of the player. I think there are lists out there that will do very good at lower point score games, and sometimes you have to win the game that way. Just like in real sports, you win some games 1-0, some games you win 5-4. So that's another option. So there's a couple ideas also being floated out there. We'll see how it works. You can also change the format. So day one, use random. Day two, you go back to the traditional method. It's another option from there. It's sort of a way of, so you want to be seeding yourself so you always are motivated to get the top score. So on day two, when the big boys come to play, who are all 3-0 from the previous day, then the submarining has gone away. You know, it's a quick solution, and we have the tools to do it, so that might work. But again, I'm still on the, is it now a time to rethink our system at this point? Corey, think about this. I mean, is it wrong? I mean, is it wrong to submarine?
Anytime you're trying to play the system, is you shouldn't try to do worse against someone so you can have an easier. I think that's why it's a good thing to have use full ties, which is who's got more points.
Okay. And yeah, I haven't made my mind up on this at this point. I agree with you, the submarining to get ahead and win their way. Parmus is, by the time you get small enough field where everybody's 4-0, there's some tough competition one way or the other. On the other hand, if I ever tried doing this, I'd probably blow the lead and lose the game. So
yeah, and that's another thing. You know, when you're looking at a lot of these, you know, really big events, you know, you have on the supermassive, the majors, you can, when there's enough people, you can go undefeated and you're still not going to make it to top 8 or even 16. So why are you submarine? In the end, it's not going to do anything for you. So why bother? There's no point in doing it at a small event because then you start building up the habit. You do that at a small event, you pick up that habit. You do it at a big event, you're going to be, you're going to feel bad for the worst reasons too, because all you've done is sabotage yourself.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a very good point, actually. Yeah, some of these top 8s and top 16s that they're doing now on the third day of a super major, there are some strong players with strong scores that just got left out. And, yeah. You're kind of, you know, you also kind of, we've seen the opposite too when you think about it. We've seen some of these where a player who went maybe with one loss and was able to get into the pairings. If you were submarining your way, you take that loss, you're done. You know, you don't have enough points to overcome all the other one loss players at that point. So I don't know. You know, I hate to criticize before we were having a solution. So I'm trying to weigh out best ways to fix this. I think it's also, how do you prove intent? I mean, it's the other fun thing, so who knows. But it's just been an interesting discussion, so we'd love to hear from you as well. So hit us up on our Facebook page with your thoughts, about submarining and this type of play at this point, and what maybe some solutions might be to fixing that. But interesting, it was an interesting development over the weekend, seeing how all that works. So, Ray, any other thoughts on submarining?
Don't do it. You're going to screw yourself over.
So you may have already seen it on our Facebook page. We do have the updated ITC Top 10 and with some flashy new graphics. So for those who missed it and have only listened to the podcast, here is our latest update. And this includes this past weekend's action. A lot of RTTs this weekend. The 3 GTs do not affect the Top 10. And it looks something like this. In 10th place, Anthony Vanilla stays put in 10th spot with 1,150 points. Nick Nadavati, drops down to 9th with 1,160 points. Johnny Vasquez, wait, who's that? You're saying? Absolutely. He shot up 21 points with a big win over the weekend, and that was a super major replacing one of his RTT scores. So he jumps 2 points ahead of Nick Nadavati for 7th place. Ben Sherman, despite having a strong performance at the Show Me Showdown, sits in 6th place with 1,164, just 2 points ahead of Johnny Vasquez. James Keeling drops down one spot to 6th. 5th place, Colin McDade jumps up a spot from his performance at the Lone Star Open. Brad Chester, despite having a wonderful performance, by the way, he unveiled his orcs as expected. At Charity Hammer, those results have not shown up yet. So he stays put at 4th place. Mark Hertel and his Advex stops, drops down the spot to 3rd. Sean Naden with his withdrawal from the LSO, that's not roll off the tongue, Lone Star Open, drops down the 2nd. And as expected, John Lennon with the big win at the Texas event with 1,319 points is your current ITC leader. And he's got a slim lead, 27-point lead over Sean Naden. So I'll be curious to see as they come down the last few months. And realistically, with COVID numbers going back up, this season could end. This season could end at any moment, you know, with tournaments being canceled in certain areas. And so it's really, you know, win now while you can, because you don't know if there's going to be an event later in the year. And I would even say LVO might be in question for late January at this point.
Keep safe from getting too much.
Absolutely. So if you have an opportunity to play in a safe format, take advantage of it. It may not be there in a few months. So, oh my goodness. All right. So we'll keep positive thoughts in the meantime. Look forward to what we have now. And look forward to also your comments regarding stuff that we talked about today, and also look for an updated ITC top 10 later in the week. Ray, anything else to add before we close out?
Like so, just stop, just being safe. We are still hands clean. Keep some hands in us.
Sounds good. So, my name's Eric, and thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.